looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Count 2-0 on Granderson. Teoscar Hernandez on deck. High fly ball, right field. This is deep. Way, way back, and that's the ball game. Granderson jumping on Craig Kimbrell's pitch for a walk-off home run.
So that's how it ended last night in Toronto. 4-3 Blue Jays over the Red Sox. Curtis Granderson with a walk-off home run against Craig Kimbrell. In the, I guess that was what? That was the 10th inning. I was going to say, I thought it was the 9th or the 10th. I couldn't even remember if the game went extra innings last night, but it did go one extra. 617-779-0985. We'll open up the phones right away, and we'll talk baseball for the next hour here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. So, if you are getting ready for Bruins Maple Leafs Game 7, another Boston-Toronto game, join us for the next hour. Sit in, settle your stomach a little bit, and then you stay right here at 7 o'clock for Bruins pregame, followed by Game 7 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinal series between the Bruins and Maple Leafs, again, right here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. With regard to the Red Sox, let me just say this right out of the gate. If you had concerns about this team coming into the year, they probably were about the manager, maybe, the infield defense, maybe, the base running, maybe, and I would tell you that all three of those things bit the Red Sox in the behind last night in Toronto in that 4-3 loss to the Blue Jays. So, to me, you start with the end of the game, obviously, and the decision to wave home Eduardo Nunez in what was a 3-3 game in the top of the 9th inning. Nunez gets waved in with Mookie Betts about to come to the plate. First base would have been open, so they probably would have walked Betts. But nonetheless, you'd have had the bases loaded with Andrew Benintendi up. Instead, Nunez gunned down at the plate and by a wide margin to prevent the winning run from scoring. Game goes into extra innings. Kimbrell gives up the home run to Granderson. The Red Sox lose 4-3. That's number one. Number two, Kimbrell in the game at all. As a fan, do you have a problem with it? Do you have a problem with a closer being in the game on the road when you're inevitably going to face a save situation if you get the lead? Okay, that's my question to you. Now, I can tell you that generally speaking, I like holding that closer out for the bottom of the inning, but there's a bigger takeaway as it pertains to Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, and that is, what do you expect from him when it comes to the bullpen right now? Could someone please tell me what the bullpen formula is 21 games into the season, or 22 games in? I guess now 17-5 the Red Sox are. Does Kimbrell come in the 8th ever? Does he come in only in save situations? Does he come in the 9th on the road? Because it feels to me like Cora has done a little bit of everything here in the early part of the year. He hasn't brought Kimbrell into the 8th. But certainly, in terms of Kimbrell's role and usage, to me, I don't really know exactly how Kimbrell is going to be used. And I thought one of the things we were going to learn here in the early part of the year was how the manager viewed his bullpen and what particular matchups he liked and did not like. And I'll expand that further. My problem with Cora in the early part of the year is I have no clue who is doing what in the bullpen. I really don't. So Bobby Pointer on opening day was not brought in to face a lefty. The next game he was. Kimbrell didn't come in the 8th at the beginning of the year, but they did bring him in to close, or in a tie game on the road in Toronto. And can someone tell me who the 8th inning guy is? Is it Kelly? Is it Barnes? Is it Carson Smith? Because Carson Smith was up in Oakland over the weekend, but David Price went back out for the inning, and even with four right-handers up, Cora didn't go to Smith. So I just feel there's some inconsistency there with Alex Cora. And again, I will tell you that in Cora's defense, he's probably searching a little bit, but I want to know from you, as a fan, Do you have any confidence in the manager right now as it pertains to the bullpen?
For me, it feels real loose, but then again, how many times has he actually been put in this kind of a situation so far this season? You could probably count on one hand and have fingers left over. But it does feel like he's flying by the seat of his pants so far with that eighth inning.
Okay, while we're at it, Murray, how'd you feel about the decision to wave in Nunez in the top of the ninth?
You know, at the time, I didn't really think about it as much. It was one of those easy-to-second-guess things once the game ended. With Betts coming up, sure, I would have liked to have seen him have the opportunity to try to knock him in. But at the time, I got it because I'd seen those kind of things before. I know you and Felger had the disagreement earlier in the afternoon show that he couldn't believe that's by the book. But, I mean, I've seen that, so I get it.
So, just to explain to callers, I say by the book. If you were to ask a manager, two outs, ninth inning, the tying run is just scored, and the winning run is coming around third, do you wave him in or hold him up? I think most managers would tell you, without knowing all of the specifics, you wave him in. You've already got the game tied. You've got two outs. Your chances of getting a hit with the next batter are probably, 35%, best case scenario? So that more likely than not, you're going to make it out in the next spot, so you wave the runner in. And yet, Nunez was thrown out by 10, 15 feet, and in this case, the next batter was Mookie Betts, so it certainly had a hand in the Red Sox losing that game to the Blue Jays as they did last night. The base running on this team, an absolute issue. It remains an issue. The bullpen, and more importantly, Cora's defining of roles in that bullpen, and I guess that's really what I come down to, is what are the precise roles of the pitchers out there, and I don't think we know it yet. So that is something to me that has bugged me about the early part of the year. And as it pertains to the turnover in the lineup, and you've had guys come in, guys come out, guys getting rest when it appears that they didn't necessarily need it. To me, boy, is there a question we ask now as it concerns one player in particular in that Red Sox lineup, which we will get to, and the infield defense on top of it. So 617-779-0985. We'll take your calls on all of those things, and we'll kick it off tonight with Nick in Belmont. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I get your point, Matt, about, you know, Kimbrel coming in the ninth. You know, should he be closing out games? I think the point of a closer, especially an elite closer like Kimbrel, is that you either want him to close out a game or you want him to give you the best chance possible at winning the game. So, I mean, I don't think there's any question that he should be brought in a close game like that to give them the best chance to win. And, you know, in terms of, you know, waving in the runner there, I think that was a pretty desperate move as well. I don't know if it has necessarily anything to do with Cora, but maybe he's instilling that in the staff. I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts on that.
So, Nick, look, desperate is a good word. It's a good word. It felt desperate. It almost felt more like them trying to get the tying run home than the winning run home. So, you know, the more I think about it, once you have the game tied, you say, well, roll the dice, make them throw you out, otherwise you take the lead. But given the margin that Nunez was thrown out by, I don't know how you can have a problem with it. The Red Sox have been thrown out on the bases more than any team in the major leagues this year, and just another frustrating play and frustrating development in what has now become, a weekend plus full of them. This is now three losses in a row. They haven't hit in the last three games. Which brings me to J.D. Martinez. Does the manager have a hand in J.D. Martinez suddenly going stone cold? We'll explain that and take more of your calls next.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
I felt like right there we needed him to get back to the dugout, and Granderson, I know Grichuk was a pinch hitter, but you know, I would have hated him to come in with traffic in that inning, because that was a thought, you know, send Joe, and I was like, no, here, we're bringing him in, he'll give us a chance, you know, to a fastball, and he didn't miss it.
Typically on the road, you hold the closer out until you get a lead, then he comes in a save situation. I'm not telling you, though, that the decision was wrong. Last year in non-save situations, Craig Kimbrel 3-0 with a 0.64 ERA. He was exceptional all year long. And Farrell did use him in non-save situations on the road. He was aggressive with him at times, and it paid off. The Red Sox won some games as a result of it, obviously, because, you know, Kimbrel was unbeaten on the season and really terrific from the beginning of the year until the very end of the season. My bigger issue with Cora is that I just don't know what his bullpen blueprint is. We are now 22 games into the year, and I still don't know who's coming in and when. And if I don't know it, my guess is the pitchers don't really know it. So the Red Sox have had some lopsided games here. They haven't been in a lot of close ones. And their bullpen has now failed them a couple of times here in the early part of the season. So they have five losses. Their bullpen has at least two of them. I'd have to think about the other ones. But to me, they lost on opening day and they lost last night. And so the bullpen overall, to me, has been a disappointment here in the early part of the year. Not a big one, a little one, because they've had a stretch in there where they had a bunch of scoreless innings in a row. But at the same time, I would tell you that a lot of those came with a big lead. So the bullpen performance really comes down to pressure situations and whether or not Alex Cora can get the right guys in the right places. And I just don't feel like there's a blueprint there yet. Okay, and to me, that's one of the things to watch for. It's still early. As long as they have one by who knows when, draw the line wherever you want. June 1st, August 1st, you tell me. I'd like to know before August 1st, I'll tell you that much. But I don't know really who he trusts in what situations yet. It's only 22 games. They've had lopsided affairs, as I've mentioned. But to me, there has been some, or there's a lack of clarity there on who pitches when. Mike is in the car. Mike, what do you got?
Thanks, Tony. He stole my thunder a little bit there, and I agree with what Jim said earlier, too. I think there haven't been as many chances because of the hot start they have. They have blown two games. They've been inconsistent, Kelly and Carson Smith both. So I think they're still figuring things out, and Cora doesn't really know, you know, where this is going to shape up. He missed an opportunity the other night with Price pitching. I mean, Price did look great through seven, but got into trouble in the eighth. He could have brought in the bullpen then and stuck with the starter. But I think, unfortunately, that's what this hot start has done for us, is we don't know where people stand. And he's still trying to figure that out, and they're still trying to figure that out.
Well, so and to me, that's the takeaway from it. Mike, again, you know, really, anytime the team loses a game, hell, anytime they win one, that isn't as lopsided as many of the wins have been here early in the year. Anytime they lose a game like that, you can look at it and you can second guess every decision the manager makes. It doesn't mean they're all wrong. So I'm not telling you definitively that bringing Kimbrel in that game last night was the wrong decision. He got Kimbrel up in the event they took the lead. I get that. He wanted him ready to be able to pitch the bottom of the ninth if they had an advantage, and he didn't want to then just sit him down, so he brought him into the game. Kimbrel ended up giving up the home run. So be it. It happens. I get it. But at the same time, it struck me, well, geez, isn't that an interesting decision? Instead of keeping Kimbrel in the bullpen and maybe telling him, you know, find a way to stay loose in case we get the lead in the 10th, and then I'll bring you in, and if not, then you don't bring him in at all. Instead of doing that, he brought him into the game, which is fine. Which is fine. But again, I think we are learning something about Cora in the process. And it is, to me, unclear again as to who pitches when out of that bullpen. Dan is in Nashua. Go.
Cora was stated earlier in an interview that they had decided on who to test from the Toronto's outfield, and it was Granderson that was to be tested if a situation like that arose. Now, I didn't know that they, you know, went through this, or maybe they did scouting reports or something, and they decided it before the play was even in play. So they were going to test Granderson no matter what in that situation. So that's probably why it looks like it was going to be automatic. And he said he stands by it, and it didn't turn out the way it did, and they're just moving on.
So, look, Dan, again, I understand why. And I would ask Jimmy Stewart, our producer, who's back at our studio in Brighton. We are broadcasting from the Star Market studio here, the Star Market broadcast studio at the TD Garden. Excuse me, in anticipation of Game 7 between the Bruins and Maple Leafs. But Jimmy, back in Brighton, I don't know if we have Cora explaining why they elected to waive home Nunez. If we do have it back there, Jimmy, let me know. So Jimmy does have it. Go ahead, Jimmy, play the sound.
Bad decision, but then a 21-year-old made an adjustment. He gets the next one, and he makes the play. So, he's
That's okay. So that's Cora talking about Devers and his decision to throw to the plate. We'll get to that in a bit, too. But if we, Jimmy, do we do have that cut?
Okay. Very aggressive. It's an aggressive one. You know, you take your chance. We didn't score for 8 innings, so, you know, it's a line drive, and he charged it, and he made a good throw. So, tip your hat to Anderson. He made a nice play.
So, I mean, you're okay with that? Or you're
fine? I'm okay. I'm okay with it, yeah.
So, look, now, Cora's going to defend his third base coach, Carlos Fables, there. And I get that part of it. The question is whether or not the scouting report is foolproof. In other words, they know they want to run on Granderson, as the caller said. And there was actually even a comment after the game last night where Cora said something to the effect of, we've been running on Granderson for 5 years. We're not going to stop now. And I'm paraphrasing, but there was an allusion to the fact that Granderson can't throw, which is true. He can't. But does that mean you always run on him? Do you run on him with a guy who's coming off a bad knee in Nunez and doesn't have the same speed that he had in the past? Do you run with him on turf where Granderson can roll the ball home? And do you run on him in a case where Granderson has the ball well in advance of Nunez having any sort of advantage in terms of getting to the plate? Like, at what point do you say, no, those odds go down under these circumstances? And again, the Red Sox have run into 14 outs on the bases, more than any team in the major leagues this year. And so, to me, if you want to second-guess that, you have every right to second-guess it. I would expect Cora to defend his third base coach. And with Mookie Betts coming up, you take the bat out of the hands of one of the best hitters in the league so far. Tony is in Medford. Go ahead.
Hey, just a quick question. So, if Nunez gets stopped and the ball gets past the catcher, he doesn't score, and the Red Sox still go on and lose in extra innings, do you think they get criticized for stopping Nunez at that point?
Tony, probably. I mean, we would say he could have scored. But you tell me, did you second-guess a decision to wave him in?
Not necessarily. I mean, I know Nunez is not the fastest player, but at the same time, you gotta take, you know, try to score. But as you said, Betts was coming up next. Maybe they walk him. Benintendi gets a shot. At the same time, I'm not really much of the baseball guru, so I'm not sure how the books go. But I wasn't really bad about the decision.
So, Tony, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the book, the quote-unquote book, would tell you that if you've already tied the game and the chance is there with two outs to take the lead and you have a guy in left field that you think has a suspect arm, to put it kindly, and Granderson does, you run. You make him throw you out. You make him make the play. And if he makes it, great. No big deal. The game's not over. You go play the bottom of the inning, in which case they did, and the same guy ends up hitting one into the seats for a home run. So I think the book would tell you that. Nope, you take that chance. That's what you do. I also think that's a bit of a cop-out, because I you'd like to think that you make every decision based on the situation. So I know it makes it simpler for us as people and as human beings to say, when this situation comes up, you do this. But I don't know that the circumstances are always the same. Who's the outfielder? Is it grass or turf? Who's coming up to the plate? Who could they counter with? Will they intentionally walk him? Is first base open? All of that stuff. And big league managers, big league coaches are paid to think of this stuff. And it just, again, I understand why they waved him in. But he got thrown out by 15 feet. He got thrown out by 15 feet. And this team has had a habit of getting too many runners thrown out. So it just doesn't feel like the base running has really all improved all that much in the early part of the year. The difference is that the Red Sox are 17-5, and they're hitting the ball out of the ballpark more. And so the base running mistakes aren't hurting them as much as they did a year ago. Last night, they hurt. In the early part of the year, they really did not. Okay, but again, it's just something to continue watching with this team.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tapped, Devers coming home again. Another try at this, and it'll be tagged out at home plate. So that time it worked. Again playing contact, and Martin is out, two gone.
So the first run of the night that the Toronto Blue Jays scored was on a play where Rafael Devers fielded a ground ball, probably should have taken the out at first base, but even so, had he made a better throw, I think he'd have had him at the plate. But he didn't make a good throw, cost the Red Sox a run. Then later in that inning, the Jays hit a ball down the third baseline, took a big hop and went off of Devers' glove, scored two more runs, and those were the only runs that the Blue Jays got during the course of the night up until Granderson's home run in the 10th. Now, I don't blame Devers for the second one. Again, on the second one, the ball hit the lip, it kicked up, it went off his glove, it was a tough play. Okay, the ball took a bad hop. But it's a play before it that may have cost the Red Sox those two runs. So the infield defense last night really failed them. And when I say a play before it, the Red Sox might have had a chance to turn an inning-ending double play before Granderson batted in the, was it the first or the second inning when the Toronto scored the three runs? I guess it was the second inning. They had a chance to turn a double play, but they were unable to do so because Eduardo Nunez was in a bad position. Okay, I'm going to ask Jimmy Stewart again, our producer. Jimmy, go ahead and play that, please.
Handling in close at first to the shortstop. Holt to Nunez, one there, and no ability to turn it, so they're going to be safe at first and third out in the middle.
Well, let me tell you why they couldn't get a double play here. If you watch where Nunez is playing, they're expecting the bunt. So he's playing in a little bit and over toward first base. Look where he is. Now he can't get back to the bag and turn this ball over normally. He has to make the catch on the run, so there's no chance to get the double play. But they were expecting bunt that situation. He's caught totally out of position, cannot turn the deuce.
Now, I have no idea why the Red Sox are expecting bunt in that spot. First and third, one out, and it was the bottom of the order was up because Devin Travis was coming up next. It was not Granderson, it was Devin Travis. So it's the number eight hitter in the lineup. In the American League, first and third, one out, the Red Sox are playing bunt. I would like someone to explain to me why they were in a bunt formation there. A bunt defense. Because Nunez was almost halfway between first and second. And as Jerry Remy pointed out, they couldn't turn the double play. So what happened is Travis ended up getting the bat when he shouldn't have been able to hit at all. Puts the ball in play. It hits the lip. It goes off of Devers' glove. Two more runs scored. Red Sox are down 3-0. Rick Porcello got screwed in that inning. But the Red Sox infield defense, which hasn't hurt them yet this year, hurt them again last night. And when I say again, was another perceived flaw in this team that bit them in the ass last night. 617-779-0985. We do have a couple lines open. Let's go to Dan, who's on the Cape. What do you got, Dan?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk briefly about Jackie Bradley Jr. He's kind of frustrating. He's got a big hole in his swing. And he's hitting 224 this year and 239 a lifetime. And I noticed last night with Osuna, everything was up and in on him. And I think the book is out right now on Jackie Bradley Jr. to pitch him up and in.
So, Dan, I would tell you that the book's been out on Jackie Bradley Jr. for about 3 years. Jackie Bradley Jr., it feels like, gives you one good month a year, one good offensive month a year, and then the rest of the time he's below average. So I have always felt like he's wildly overrated. My opinion on him has not changed, but he is not, you know, he was not number one on my list of things to bitch about from that game last night. Nonetheless, Will in Hanover also thinks that Bradley is expendable. Go ahead, Will.
Hey, Tony, thanks for taking my call. Honestly, I'm sick of JBJ, you know, since that tweeting that picture of Eck last year. You know, he's just soft. You know, we got to get him out of here. You think there's any way we move him for a bullpen piece that we could use? All right, thanks.
So, Will, I think the time to move Bradley, if there was a time, was during the offseason. You know, frankly, I'm a little surprised he's still here. I think he's maxed out as a player. I think he is what he is. And it's fine if you have a deep lineup and a championship caliber team. And you think you can win a World Series because his defense is so good. And I'm not telling you the Red Sox don't have that kind of team. When you have a team like them, you can carry him. But I think that if you need some more offense out of that position, you got to move him. You know, unless you have a deep lineup, I'm not sure you can carry a guy like Bradley on your roster. Now, the Red Sox offensive struggles here in the last little bit, to me, have been interesting for lots of reasons. First of all, they went from white hot. I mean, they were hitting everything. And Mitch Moreland hit their fifth grand slam of the season on Friday night. Moreland was in the lineup for J.D. Martinez, which brings me to the larger point. Cora has been moving guys in and out of that lineup with regularity. And he's saying that he's doing it for the long haul. So the whole idea is, I'm going to need all of these guys in late August and September. I'm going to need them all. And so they're all going to get their rest. And I believe in every guy on the roster. And Friday night was proof of that. He sat J.D. Martinez. Martinez did not play in the opener against the A's. Mitch Moreland, as a result, was in the lineup because Hanley Ramirez served as the designated hitter that night. Moreland gets up there, hits a grand slam. They win the game 8-3. But you want to talk about an odd time to take a guy out of your lineup? J.D. Martinez, to that point, was as hot as he had been as a member of the Red Sox. In the series against the Los Angeles Angels, he went 8-12. And if you extend it to the series before against the Orioles, overall, J.D. Martinez was 13-24. 13-24 in his last six games. He was hitting almost .550. Okay, .550. So they took him out of the lineup. And you know what he's done since, Murray? Take a guess. He was 13-24, maybe hotter than any guy in the league. They gave him a night off. And what has happened in the three games since?
Dried up.
0-11, 8 strikeouts. So is that a cause and effect?
Oh, it feels like it is.
Or is that just, you know, timing and a streaky hitter? Maybe we haven't seen enough of J.D. Martinez to know that he's a streaky guy. I don't know. Maybe he is. But for a guy that the manager was comparing to Manny Ramirez, I don't know that you go from that hot to that cold overnight unless the manager takes you out of the lineup, you don't play for 48 hours, and now all of a sudden you can't make contact. Like, that to me strikes me as odd.
Yeah, and this isn't going to be the first time that this happens this season, because with that glut of outfielders and Martinez wanting to play out there, this is going to continue to happen throughout the season, which is going to be frustrating, especially when a guy's hitting like that.
So, look, again, all I'm saying is, if you're looking for a trade-off to the substitutions that Cora is making on a regular basis, this might not be the only time all year you see a guy go from real hot to real cold. And maybe Martinez is the kind of guy that needs the at-bats every night. Maybe the disruption in routine throws him off. Other guys, maybe you can sit them, they jump right in, they start hitting again. No problem. But in the case of J.D. Martinez, I think we're going to need to see it. So, again, I'm not ready to blow the whistle on Cora on it yet. I'm just saying that, on the one hand, he sat J.D. Martinez and got a grand slam out of Mitch Moreland for one game. In the three games since, the Red Sox have scored 4 runs. They've been no hit. Of the 4 runs they've scored, 2 of them came in the 9th inning last night. And J.D. Martinez is now 0-11 with 8 strikeouts. So there was an absolute cost. There was a price for taking him out of that lineup. 617-779-0985. We'll give you the big matchup of the game brought to you by Big Y. We'll do that next, and we'll wrap it up with your calls leading into Game 7, Bruins Maple Leafs.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
You're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
What is he doing? That had to have been some of the worst base running I have ever seen. What was he thinking?
It's time for the Baseball Reporter's base running blunders.
A sinking line drive is caught. Maybe a double play here. Throw back and got him. That doubles up Xander Bogaerts, who thought it was going to fall in. Betts trying to get back to throw. The tag. He's out. Well, that started with Ramos making an outstanding play there at home plate. He came up gunning.
Yeah, surprise monkey. He thought that ball was going to get by Ramos, and Ramos did make a very fine play, and then a quick throw to first base to get back.
Base hit into right. Jackie Bradley coming in. Brock Holt trying to score. Gomez checking it home. Here's the tag, and he is going to be out at home plate. Little comeback, a runner trying to move up, play at third. The gun there, and he is out.
I would say that is not a good base running play by Devers. When you get a ball hit back to the pitcher, you've got to be sure that it gets by the pitcher.
It gets away from the catcher. Benintendi trying to move up. Here's the tag. He's out. And that's going to be out number three. It winds up being a disjointed strike him out, throw him out, double play.
Nunez trying to score. Here's the play at the plate. He is going to be tagged out at home.
So once again, we are broadcasting to you tonight from our Star Market studio here at the TD Garden. Game 7, Bruins-Leafs coming up shortly. And I mention that now because the loonies are out, Murray. We have glass walls in our studio here at the TD Garden. For those of you who watch the Pelgrim Mass simulcast, you know that. Some nut job who looks like the Ultimate Warrior is out there right now.
Yeah, we have the Bruins Ultimate Warrior and Bruins Sting.
Sting? Is that who that guy is?
Sting, yeah.
See, you know that better than I do.
Of course, they were the Blade Runners in 1987, a tag team, as you know.
So just quickly, we're going to get to the matchups in a second. But, Murray, you mentioned something that Alex Cora did his weekly interview on our competitors and was asked about Blake Swihart. I haven't seen the story.
Yeah, I only saw this floating around on Twitter earlier today, and apparently he is unwilling to have Blake Swihart play as catcher. Going forward, which I kind of find ridiculous. And, you know, yesterday you brought up the fact that this team is getting virtually zero production right now at the plate from either Sandy Leon or Christian Vasquez. And I would think this is something that maybe he'd want to be open-minded about going forward. I know he's a bit of a defensive liability, but, I mean, a few years ago he was also referenced as, you know, Buster Posey 2.0.
Correct.
And then they ruined him by putting him in left field. He gets injured, and it's really not been the same since for him. But he tore it up in spring training. It just feels like they don't have a spot for the kid, but the logical spot would be catcher. But he's reluctant to do it. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. And I said yesterday, I haven't checked it today, but I don't think it's changed. The Red Sox have the worst OPS at catcher of any team in the major leagues. Their offensive production at the position has been the worst in the game. And that says something, because that's a bad position. Right, that is typically a defensive position. If you are dead last, then you must really suck offensively. And so they've got nothing there. Now, look, I'm one of those people that believes that defense is more important at that position. But if it's gotten to the point where they're not even considering Swihart an option, you're telling me you're playing Tampa Bay, you can't catch Swihart a game? Like, that doesn't make any sense to
right.
me. What's he on the roster for? You might as well trade him. Like, that makes zero sense to me. Zero. Part of the appeal with Swihart is that he can catch. So he now feels like the man without a position. So maybe Swihart is trade bait. He didn't have options.
But they've used him at times already at first base, right? So even thinking, you know, look, again, you can now second guess last night's game. But why not have him at first, have Martinez in the open? So Benintendi drove me nuts last night because his numbers against lefties are awful. He's not good against Hap anyway, and he had a terrible night last night. So give the off night to Benintendi, put Martinez in the field, have your first baseman be Blake Swihart, you know, get him some reps there. Like, I don't know. I just feel like the kid should be playing, and with the offense all of a sudden, you know, being inept over the last few games, I feel like, you know, why not throw caution to the wind and see if something pans out with the kid? You know?
Feels like he's a man without a position or a spot. Maybe that's a better way to put it. Because I've come to the conclusion he had no options, so they couldn't send him back to the minors without someone claiming him. They would have lost him. I've come to the conclusion that he's trade bait for July. That's the only conclusion I can come to now if he's not going to catch. If he's not going to catch, what the hell do you have him for? I mean, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, you know, you've got horrible production at catcher. You got a kid there that might be able to hit, and yet your manager's now saying he's not going to catch. To me, that's just, I don't get it. The big matchup of the game is brought to you by Big Y World Class Market. I'd like to give you a couple of these every night, just so guys you can keep an eye on. Eduardo Rodriguez against the Blue Jays. Kevin Pillar hits him, 5 for 15, 333. Interestingly enough, Josh Donaldson, who I used to love as a player, but he feels like washed up now. And I want to watch more of it, but he's had a lot of leg injuries. Josh Donaldson in his career against Eduardo Rodriguez, 1 for 16. Wow. That's an .063 average. So, you know, Rodriguez has that cutter that can get in on righties. Pillar hits him a little bit. Donaldson does not. On the other side, the Red Sox don't have great matchup numbers with Aaron Sanchez. Jackie Bradley, for all the criticism he's taken on the show tonight, Bradley has hit him. He is 4 for 11 against Sanchez. It's not a ton of at-bats. but it's a 364 average, I think it is, or something to that effect. Hanley has not done well against this guy, and I'd venture to guess that most of the right-handers in the Red Sox lineup are going to have trouble with Sanchez. He's got a good breaking ball. Hanley's 2-for-13 in his career. The Red Sox have not scored lately. Suddenly, this does not feel like a great series for the Red Sox. Chris Sale goes tomorrow night. He'll go on his regular turn. And so, to me, if you can get this game tonight, and I don't love the pitching matchup, given the way the Red Sox are swinging the bats, but if you can get this game tonight and then get Sale tomorrow and you come out of it with 2 out of 3, that is hardly a bad thing.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The